Thanks to Bob and Bruce for the opportunity to address this crowd. I am actually going to talk a lot about the intentions on the research side that the NIH has launched to transform clinical and translational research. So first, do folks know what translational research is or translational medicine? Raise your hands if you know. Okay. See, that's what's wrong with pathology. What we do in pathology is so linked to translating diagnoses into action in medicine and translating research that happens with what we do in pathology into practice of medicine and also translating it back from the clinical side to research. We don't really need to pay attention to translational research because we are the ultimate translationalists. So what I'm going to try to do today is talk about how pathology informatics, as one of the many parts of our discipline, should hop on board with this major NIH initiative. It is a research initiative, but really is focused on kind of facilitating the very rapid translation of research discoveries into use for biomarkers, which will make it into our clinical laboratories, but also then into new drugs that allow us to treat diseases and then implementing it into practice. So what my central tenet's going to be today is why should pathology, particularly a term that Bruce invented, pathology bioinformatics, be a major cog in the wheel for translational research. So today I'm going to talk about two activities. One's called the Clinical and Translational Science Institute, and the other is the Center for Clinical and Translational Informatics. I'm currently the director of this new center, but searching for a national director in my role as the chairman of biomedical informatics at the University of Pittsburgh. So first I have to just give this as disclosure in red. Our companies whose technologies I may mention today that we have relationships with either through corporate support for our national meetings and our national member association or through corporate-sponsored research, and those are Cerner, Mises, IBM, DID Corp, and DB Motion. I will not be talking about a company that I have still equity in, Clariant, formerly Trestle Corporation, nor any of my paid consultancies, but they're here for completeness. So we have formed at the University of Pittsburgh two new entities, a Clinical and Translational Science Institute. This is the University of Pittsburgh's attempt to transform clinical and translational research. This is part of what's called an NIH roadmap activity. How many folks have heard of NIH roadmap? Okay. And what the roadmap initiatives are Elias Zerhouni, who's a radiologist, heads up the NIH. It's his best attempt to shake off the dust from what has been clinical and translational research in our academic health centers and make it more focused on delivering results. So our clinical and translational research program at the University of Pittsburgh helped form this new center, which I'll talk about. So what does pathology have to do with the Center for Clinical and Translational Informatics? Well, I'm going to illustrate how key pathology informatics is to our research initiatives. I'm also going to talk about how tissue and serum banking is central to our strategy for being involved in this, and how, in an emerging area, how patient safety informatics actually will play dramatically into this space. So the NIH this year funded 12 new sites. These include Duke, Mayo, University of Pennsylvania, Yale. All of these sites have significant pathology strength. But where is pathology informatics in these initiatives? Unfortunately, there isn't a lot showing. I had a very encouraging discussion with Mike Feldman about where Penn is headed. But pretty much pathology and pathology informatics has been pretty silent in the CTSA program. And, you know, how can we get involved? Well, you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. 60 of these centers are going to be funded. At the University of Pittsburgh, our five-year program is an $83 million program, the largest single research program that I've ever been involved in, and is a significant amount of funding to transform the landscape. 48 more sites are going to be funded the next 5 years. So if you have not heard about this in your academic health center, or your aggregated practice that has academic affiliations, I suggest that pathology informatics and pathology needs to get on board with this. So let me tell you a little bit about this NIH roadmap stuff. If you go to the site, that's nihroadmap.nih.gov, it talks about the five key programs to transform research at the NIH. And the one that's outlined in red here, reengineering the clinical research enterprise, is where the CTSA program fits. In the first round, 12 programs were funded. This is the list. But most notably, 52 other centers were funded with planning grants to then submit a full application. So it's very early in the stage of this. The awards just started in October of 2006. And this represents a significant new opportunity. And if you're interested, on this website, all of the funded sites except Yale, and how Yale as it is not to post their application, all the other sites have actually put up their grant on the site for public viewing. These are very interesting applications, and I encourage you, if you want to learn more about this, the grants are already posted on this website. So I'm going to take a step back now that I've introduced CTSA and translational research, and I'm actually going to go back and steal some slides from a talk Bruce gave in 2003 at APIII about the chronology of pathology informatics and lay some track about why pathology informatics is such a powerful and motive force in this arena if we focus ourselves appropriately. So this history includes the coining of the term by Bruce in 1990. It also, Bob Beck and Greg Buffon proposed the specialty as a new major part of pathology as a whole in 1993. And then in 2002, Bruce held the first meeting at AIMCL to focus on pathology bioinformatics as the saving grace for where pathology informatics should go. So with that as background, Bruce then talked about how to distinguish pathology bioinformatics from the larger field of bioinformatics. And understanding this emphasis on fundamental disease processes and the impact that academic pathology departments could have on pharma. Well, this is the translation. Why impact on pharma? Biomarker development for diagnostic tests, new drugs from those biomarkers that will lead to preventive therapies. You could see around us there are many more biological therapies based on discovered biomarkers today than there are poisons that we've used, at least in the cancer space. This emphasis on patient security and confidentiality and safety is an important one. And kind of highlighted by Bruce back then was the importance of tissue banks in the diagnostic mission. I still hold it that if we're going to get to personalized medicine, intelligently managing fresh, frozen serum and paraffin archives by pathology departments is going to be a critical part of that mission. I cannot emphasize, and this is the world I'm living today, the emphasis on standards and data exchange. This is where all of the lab information systems vendors and all of healthcare IT fall flat. We talk a lot about standards, we talk a lot about data exchange, but quite frankly, we have billing and transaction systems today. So this is an important change that we need to manage. And this emphasis on large web-accessible databases based on longitudinal standards and clinical is going to be the key. So knowledge engineering about all the data we collect in our regular workflow of pathology is important for this progress. So these are two very important slides I'm going to show you. Bruce outlined where he felt in the framework of clinical and applied research being up here and basic research being here with this diagonal supporting where the domain of pathology informatics is, and hence then where is the domain of pathology bioinformatics. You could see that there's a much larger representation into the research. This is translational research and translational medicine. This is why pathology is so important. And managing our information and leveraging as an asset into this new world we're painting at the NIH is really a very critical thing. So pathology really has to grab and manage the space, which is the dominant space for this translation to occur. So Bruce talked about a informatics transformational hypothesis, and I do believe this opportunity, providing billions of dollars in research over the next 5 years as the sites come online, is important. But let me tell you a little story about the CTSA program. Does anybody have any idea how old the CTSA program might be building on? 5 years? 10 years? 20 years? At the University of Pittsburgh, we have been funded for 47 years by the NIH to put together the programs that CTSA is being built on. The programs began 54 years ago. So think about 54 years of architecture being transformed and kind of being opened up as an opportunity, and what the next 50 years might portray. This is the most significant long-term funding to transform the way we manage medicine through translational research and discovery that has ever been put together. So this is a very, very important program. And if pathology hops on board, there are very powerful financial drivers, this research funding being the most important, and the pile driving with big pharma that is going to occur around this program that really can make this happen. I think the most challenging part of this is to take and unlock the data that is disturbingly placed in multiple data repositories and putting it to life. So all the big companies, Siemens included, IBM, Oracle, have come together and are really kind of swarming on this opportunity because of the very large concerns around getting to personalized medicine that exist here. So at the core of this, and as a starting point, you've heard me talk multiple times about tissue banks in the past and referring to them. I believe the critical information technology around tissue banks is going to be the enabling building block for this. And there, although many of the funding agencies have stumbled around tissue banking itself, there is renewed interest in actually extracting the data clinically that gets associated with tissue banks. So this framework really is the basis for academic pathology departments to develop a relationship with pharma. It also is the basis for essentially creating these very large web-based relational data stores that can be used as disease classifiers or as disease stagers as individual treatments evolve that are personalized to you and your genome and you and your proteome and you and your metabolome. Anybody see the article the other day about the breath test for lung cancer? Anybody? No? We're going to have to get that posted for you, Bruce. They actually are doing preliminary studies where they're getting essentially metabolites from the breath that are specific to patients with lung cancer. It's a very brave new world out there. So pathologists need to embrace and pursue data standardization because none of this is going to occur without the very boring work of classifying our data, creating very structured ways to report it, and to get on board with all the other data standards initiatives to make it happen. And as much as I think there's some very good news around LOINC and SNOMED, both being pathology-derived standardization products, the very sad news is we're still not very far with our vendor community or with our research community about using these standards in any really productive way. There are some good little flashes of brilliance out there, but there's very little linking it together so that when information moves around in the healthcare environment, and we know we do this all by HL7, that standardization is actually coming to life in the messaging frame. There's a lot of good intentions here, but very little progress. So if we're going to hop on board, pathologists need to get involved in these initiatives. And quite frankly, we've been probably some of the most productive individuals in getting these efforts forward. You know, our own Kent Spackman, a pathologist at Oregon Health Sciences, has really helped the College of American Pathologists and a group of people push SNOMED. SNOMED's getting ready to go global. Sad part about it is our foreign competitors will do better with this because they will actually use these tools than I think the progress we're making here in the States. So it's a very good sign that it's going global, but it's a very bad sign that we have traction here in the States at the kind of level that we need. So standardization is going to be important. So Bruce's take-home lectures, and I'm just really giving Bruce's lecture. I didn't have much to go on today, so I figured I'd just speak from the oracle here. Pathology informatics is really important as a discipline, but this pathology bioinformatics piece is really critical. So, you know, since this is a four-year-old lecture, I think there is a lot of good news in this, and Bruce, as usual, is about 4 years ahead, so I figured I'd roll out these slides. I took these without permission, and we'll end the middle of my lecture on this basis. But I think these are really key to bridging and linking decisions. And the framework that Bruce didn't have before is the finances to do this are this clinical and translational program. And pathologists have time. Those programs are going to come on board in the next 5 years, 60 more sites, but also they'll be funded for the next 50 years. That's a very long time to accomplish some critical goals. So thank you, Bruce, for your slides. Now I'll go back to my own. So as part of our clinical and translational informatics initiative, we had three specific aims. I'm only going to talk about two of them today. The first is to develop and implement and maintain the most advanced integrated tools to support clinical research. So this integration of pathology bioinformatics is very key. At the basis of this is a system-wide tissue and clinical data annotation. We have a program that I spoke about before about CABIG, and I'll provide a little bit more information about what CABIG is in tissue banking tools. And we've really worked very carefully to use tools that manage clinical research with tools in tissue banks that have been vetted both by our financial and research enterprise at UPMC to roll this out. We also have, at the core of this, I'll mention a large data warehousing strategy that fits well with what the Siemens team is at. And the goal here is really, this is information technology. This isn't development. These are tools that are already built that we now just to roll out and deeply embed with implementation and practice within our own environment. Easy thing to say, very hard thing to do, and I'll tell you why. So in terms of tissue banking, there is this part that is essentially the tissue itself. There is the phenotype, or the clinical information that describes that patient, their disease, their stage, etc. And that phenotype, plus the biological inventory, has to talk to these other high-throughput methodologies that create these very high-dimensional data sets. So tissue banking informatics needs to manage this entire enterprise. And we barely are doing this today. We do not have the deep driver still, even after 7 years of development at the University of Pittsburgh, the really deep way to co-associate that data with proteomics or genomics data. But there are some very bright signs about how that is happening, particularly actually at the University of Michigan. So this space is the baseline for getting started. So what we have done with CABIG is create a suite of tissue banking tools, and I don't want to go into a lot of detail, but just enough of the complexity to show you what's here. There's an inventory management piece that creates this interface to genomics and proteomics data. There's a tool that takes all of the old data in our clinical systems, our anatomic pathology systems, and externalizes them to the research world, a tool called CATIES. You know, our pathology reports not being structured and being the artwork that we still tolerate our anatomic pathologists to deliver causes problems for us because you can't get the quantifying data out of a large flowery text report. So what CATIES does, it allows us to take millions of patient specimens that are locked up in our LISs and make them available for data mining purposes. And then there's another tool called Clinical Annotation Engine, which allows other types of clinical annotation to be layered on top of biospecimens as we prospectively bring them together. So University of Pittsburgh's been very key to developing TIES and CAE. WashU has actually developed CA Tissue Core, and currently at Pittsburgh, we're rolling this out as part of our CTSA program. So let me tell you a little bit about another of the bright lights in pathology. How many folks know about the CAP cancer checklist? Okay, so that's the most hands I've seen. Okay, so you can actually use what's in the CAP checklist to create an information model that can be codable, that creates real knowledge about the patient's pathology through object modeling exercises. So what's really nice about the CAP checklist is most pathologists, all just to get certification by the American College of Surgeons, all of the hospitals and departments they're embedded in will go and put the CAP checklist in place so that they can get this certification. Didn't require a financial driver. These protocols describe a wide range of tumors and a large fraction, greater than 95% of all cancer cases, and essentially are authored by committees in our fields and have been now made a requirement by ACOS certification. And what we've asked as a research question is, are the CAP protocols actually amenable to information modeling. So could you take this and create a model around it? And not surprisingly, because there are classification hierarchies here, and there are true value domains with precise definitions, we can actually create information models out of this. And this is kind of our workflow for creating an information model out of the CAP checklist, which then allow us to stick it into a programming language as an object where other people can call to those items and use them for classifying patients. A lot of informatics gobbledygook about taking vocabulary services, common data elements, and standards to allow them then to be externalized to the outside community. So Rebecca Crowley, who's an assistant professor in our group, actually has published in BMC Biomedical Informatics the modeling of the first CAP cancer checklist as information models in open source that anybody can consume of, embed into their commercial products, and are available through the CABIG website. And she's modeled 10 of the cancer diseases already, with another 33 to go. And we continue to seek funding sources to get through all of these information models, but are doing it on our own time through CTSA now. But all the major cancers, breast, prostate, colon, lung, head and neck, brain, melanoma, ovarian, endometrial, and cervical cancer are already available as open source information models, thanks to the great work of Rebecca and her team. Now, why is that important? Well, it's important so that information systems can pick up and share that data very easily between them. So one of the problems with developing tools is you've got to have tools that talk to other people's tools. You can't just create the whole universe for itself. And there are some very smart people that are out there that are believing the lab information systems industry is slowly sliding, or maybe it's ascending, down the scale where lots of little pieces of application code are being more valuable to us in the way we do work today than the actual big systems that we use to manage. These small applets have to be able to share information through application programming interfaces to be able to make this come together, and we've exploited this by creating lots of little tools that talk to one another in our work with CA tissue. Just to show you a little bit of the complexity of CA ties, this is a pipeline of about 11 pieces of software that take text and process it from language into real data and then represent it in knowledge with these models. So I won't talk a lot about how this happens, but you load surgical pathology reports, you then have to de-identify them, annotate them, and then share the data through an open architecture, which requires a heck of a lot of very geeky stuff behind the scenes, dealing with negation, processing the language. But you know what? Pathologists have always, again, been in the lead in this. The only real autocoders that ever had value in this community have really been the ones based on SNOMED, SNOMED 2. There is no autocoder today in SNOMED CT, a real problem with the utilization of SNOMED. But we're actually working on that at the University of Pittsburgh as part of this project. Right now, the vocabulary service we're using is a cancer-specific service. And as a result of our movement into all the rest of biomedicine with our CTSA program, SNOMED seems a very appropriate choice for us at this stage for getting to the broader context of medicine, but still needs a lot of work. De-identification of reports is more a research issue, but it strips all of the HIPAA-mandated identifiers. This is a de-identified pathology report, and you can see all of the identifiers have been stripped and replaced. The interesting thing about this software, which was developed at the University of Pittsburgh and is licensed to DID Data Corp, is it keeps track of who by having a codification engine inside of it. So every time it would see my name, it put some unique identifier that no one would recognize for my name. It would also shift all the dates. So if, let's say, the patient had a biopsy and a resection and then a recurrence, it would strip the actual date out, put in a fake date, but keep them all in registrar. That's a pretty complex thing to do over a variety of different records. But to make our clinical records available openly for research purposes, de-identification is key in this era of HIPAA. So how do you put all this together? How does CA tissue work? You may have some basic information on what you want from the patient, that CORE would enter inventory of available specimens, clinical data that's based on outcomes, and then pathology review data that would come from TIES, and then distribute it. So you need pieces of software that work together that accomplish all of these goals. And in the day of personalized medicine, where a person with a metabolic disease appears for a new bone marrow biopsy, and you want to compare the old results on that patient with the new results, you're going to be able to you're going to have to manage old serum samples, old bone marrow samples, and old tissue pieces to do interim reporting in the framework of personalized medicine. We feel very strongly that this framework for tissue banking applications will be strongly required to accomplish that. This is more implementation detail, but how do you actually build a complete system through these three modules? And I won't talk about this, but again, you need implementation teams that understand open source software to be able to support this. This is not the work of our usual analyst staff for our LIS. On the other hand, once implemented, supporting really is there. So one of the secrets to, I think, our success in Pittsburgh is a strong working relationship with the folks who actually manage our LIS, with the folks that develop the software, and the dynamism of the use of tools between the two groups, creating significant efficiencies of scale. This part gets a little more dense, but I want to walk away. The only thing you need to get from these next five, six slides is that standards and the push for those standards and structuring data is key to make this happen, not only in the research realm, but eventually for integrating healthcare IT. So the second aim, which is the informatics aim of our CCTI grant, is to share, implement, and support open source tools using a CORE architecture in an interoperable grid. And we initially talked about this in the framework of the CA Big program. This requires implementing an environment, both network, hardware, and software, to promote interoperability between applications. And I'm glad we may have up to 50 years of funding through the CTSA program to accomplish this, because quite frankly, this is the big one. This is the one we haven't been able to accomplish. This is why healthcare IT is a mess in the States, because our systems, our vendor-based systems, do not interoperate. We need to figure out ways to nibble at that. So I'm suggesting in this research frame that we're going to create a CORE architecture that has vocabulary and ontology-based interoperability principles built in at the start. And for the first 5 years, we're going to get through a framework of demonstrating this for our tissue banking and clinical trials applications at the University of Pittsburgh. We want these tools to talk so that there's this very open query between the biological resources and the clinical trials and research data in our environment. So this may be CA Big architecture, or more likely will be linked to a commercial effort that's occurring at UPMC, an effort by a small Israeli company, DB Motion, that is actually ascribing to the kind of principles in terms of HL7 version 3 messaging that we really need, that we do not have in our current commercial environment. Now, it's a very risky project. Interestingly, our UPMC DB Motion project is $83 million over 5 years, and our CTSA application is $83 million over 5 years. So I hope that the combined mass of those numbers will give us some real demonstration projects looking at the ability to actually promote interoperability in a clinical and research environment together. So I'm going to just say a little bit about CA Big and interoperability, although, quite frankly, we're going to go to a new model for this going forward. But CA Big is the Cancer Biomedical Informatics Grid. It's a research effort our group's been involved with for the last 4 years that essentially requires structuring of all our data via common data elements using some ISO standards and vocabulary services to essentially create this interoperability. So these models, like the CAP cancer protocol checklists, create biomedical objects or information objects that can be then shared and reposited to be used across research institutions at this time. It requires us to structure all of our data, and again, on an ISO-compliant fashion, I'll talk a little bit about that, and to use a vocabulary service. The major thing I'd like to get across here is we need our information system structured to be able to consume of and use these services so that the code within our applications is reusable, and the vocabularies that we tie applications together that bind them and allow them to interoperate come together. So ISO metadata standard is just essentially a way of representing all the things about a data piece of data so you really know what it is. So that when you say, in this instance, image coronary artery calcification, you really represent this as a data element with a value domain that essentially says yes or no about a particular representation. And you know that this is an imaging indicator that represents an anatomic object called a coronary. And all of that data needs to be represented in this. And this is actually a fair amount of work. And one of the biggest problems today, both for corporate world and the research world, is there aren't enough people skilled in this kind of knowledge representation and ontologies. And in fact, the most telling sign is most of the people that are trained up on this are sucked right into industry. So there's very little left in academia. So we have to get better at training people in this vocabulary and ontology science. So if you want to learn more about CABIG and the CA Core software development, these tools are all downloadable, and anyone sends me an email, I'll send you all of the open source tools that have already been developed by CABIG on a CD-ROM. This actually describes the architecture infrastructure that we're going to be modifying, bringing in-house at Pittsburgh and creating a Pittsburgh instance of this. So in wrapping up, the value of pathology informatics to translational medicine is huge. In this framework of getting to personalized medicine, anatomic pathology and clinical pathology, tissue banking and imaging will really create fusion products with genomics and outcomes measures. And if we can really get our hands around this data and get off of, at least in the anatomic pathology frame or clinical pathology team, as the person that kicks out the test value, but rather than the person who managed the knowledge around those data elements and images, we can really accomplish a lot more. And I want to actually, I've stolen another slide here. I didn't ask John Gilbertson for permission. This is actually from 1999 from John Gilbertson, who's now at Case Western Reserve, about how much personalized medicine is going to require what he coined infocentric networks. These information relationships right now in medicine are really in silent upheaval. We are so much more dependent upon the interplay of information between patient and clinician than we have ever been. In the past, it was this linear processing. We as pathologists gave our information to clinicians who then referred them to the patient. If we can get into this kind of framework, where we're one of the hubs instead of the group in the basement, we can really transform our practice. And quite frankly, the slide now, which is over 7 years old, John was saying, in 20 years, we're really going to have a major impact if we move along this path. I don't think we've done very good in these last 7 years. So this is one of the ways we can reposition ourselves in pathology through pathology bioinformatics. I've got a bunch of recent presentations or recent publications from our group. If you want any of them, I can be happy to accept an email and PDF them. If you want to learn more about this, the companion meeting that we've held with strong support from Bruce is going to be back in Pittsburgh, APIII, this year from September 9th to 12th. Please join us and also support our not-for-profit member organization, the Association for Pathology Informatics, which is progressively doing spectacular things for this discipline. I hope you all are members. Again, if I can provide any other further information, let me know, and I'll take some questions.